to English Talk, the podcast for people who feel insecure speaking English as a non-native at work. Join me and my guests as we chat about the challenges of speaking up in English when you're not only a non-native speaker, but also a bit of an introvert, and hopefully pick up some useful tips on how to manage and overcome the insecurities and challenges that come from being more visible in the global workplace. This week, I'm joined by ex-senior leader and introvert Alex Nunn. Alex currently works with charity leaders to help them feel more resilient so they can get on with the work they love. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today. Now, you describe yourself as an ex-senior leader and introvert.
Yeah, I do. Thank you for having me. It's so nice to be here with you. I spent most of my career working for charities and did that thing that people often do. They sort of find themselves working in the charity sector and gradually made my way up the management ladder and found myself as an assistant director of a homelessness charity. And yeah, I very much identify as an introvert. And whilst I think there are moments where others might not see me that way, it's mm-hmm. definitely kind of how I feel on the inside.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when did you first realise that you were an introvert?
Oh, very early. And I don't even remember thinking I was anything else. And we moved quite a lot when I was a kid. So I went to a couple of different primary schools, went to a couple of different secondary schools in different parts of the country. And I certainly knew by the time I was at the second primary school, so probably 8 or 9, that I was more of the observer. I wasn't kind of the middle of the pack, as it were. And I think I was always one of those people who I would have a very small group of close friends, mm-hmm. and then I'd kind of get on with everyone else. You know, I suppose I'd class everyone as acquaintances, but those people who are really close friends would be a small group. And I think I can really attribute that to sort of my introverted nature.
Yeah. So is that something that you were aware of? So actually at the time at 8 or 9, you're aware that you were an introvert, or is this reflective looking back and you can now see it?
That's a really interesting question. Definitely looking back, I see that's the pattern I was in. And I think I was aware at that age that, you know, I wasn't the big personality. I didn't have sort of loads and loads of friends. I wasn't kind of, I wasn't the class clown. I was the studious type. I was the good kid. Mm-hmm. I would, the teachers would like me because I was well behaved. I remember actually at that school, some of the kids were allowed to help out with the school library, and that was one of my jobs. So yeah, I was always that kind of quiet, studious kid, kind of watching what was going on in the world.
So it sounds like that was actually an advantage for you, or had some benefits in the school time, some privileges, some sort of working in the libraries, maybe not a privilege, but a sort of a position.
Yeah, I think it was a safe position to be in. It, you know, I never got into trouble. Teachers always liked me. So I think certainly in terms of kind of going through the education system, it suited me. But it also meant that, you know, I wasn't always comfortable being the kid who raised their hand to kind of give answers in class. I think I've always shied away from attention, certainly at school. And so I think there's a bit of a balance there. There's kind of staying in a safe place where you're kind of, you're just going along. You've got your kind of core group of friends. You kind of get on with people, but you're not, eyes aren't on you, I suppose.
So how was, so that's part of your school life. And as you say, if you're not speaking up, not wanting to ask questions is one thing. How does that then progress into work life? And did that throw different challenges? How did you feel prepared or deal with that?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because as we were talking about that idea of kind of putting your hand up, there are certainly elements as a manager and a leader where I wouldn't want to be seen, and where that would still raise its head, and I had to learn how to kind of be more vocal, be more present in meetings and things like that. But in other aspects of work, that wasn't so much of an issue, or it became, got to a point where it wasn't an issue. So I remember very early in my career, I started doing some training with my then manager. I was a team leader, a deputy manager by that point. And I started delivering training with her. And I was so nervous to begin with, because it's so out of my comfort zone. It's sort of, you know, those stories you tell yourself as of who you are as the person. My internal story has always been that I'm the quiet observer. I'm the friend people go to for help. You know, that's the role I play. And so kind of stepping into a role where you're delivering training, where you're leading, kind of was definitely uncomfortable and a bit of a leap for me.
Yeah.
But I found that I really love training people. And as I think in every single role I've done, I've delivered at least one training course as part of that role. And as I moved into more senior positions, big parts of those roles became developing whole training programs and developing organizational strategies, and those two things going hand in hand. And I just love it. And I find that so interesting, because it is all of the things that usually make me uncomfortable: standing up in front of people, talking to them, delivering information, kind of creating conversations between them, facilitating things between them. In other aspects of life, that's not my bag. It's not the sort of thing that I would really be choosing to do. But within that role, I really enjoy it. I really love it.
So it sounds to me almost as if having this introverted side of you enables you in a training to look out at this sea of faces, these people, and see where they're limiting themselves. Get over yourself a little bit and just emphasize with them and say, hey, I see what you're struggling with, and help them with things you've learned, ways you've learned to overcome this.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something about being an introvert makes, or being a great observer of people and being an introvert go hand in hand, I think. I don't think it's necessarily one causes the other, but I think they're traits that go together. And certainly I think that's meant that I'm very good at reading people. I sort of can have a sense of people and the cues they're giving off. And so I think you're right. I think that's a real skill in a trainer or facilitator, to be able to draw those quieter people out, to kind of supportively and kindly ask those who are perhaps more dominant to kind of give other people an opportunity and to get people to reflect and share those reflections. Because I think 9 out of 10 people going on a training course, you know, there's something about being back in the classroom, isn't there? Yeah. And people who are happy to chat and participate and be kind of present suddenly can't do that in a training room. Everyone kind of closes down. No one wants to be the kid putting their hand up and answering. And so finding ways to support that and bring that out is really important, I think.
Yeah, it can really throw up some, some quite traumatic sometimes school time situations. And, you know, some of the people who would be listening to this are also non-native speakers. And for them, you're not just dealing with this introversion and slightly highly sensitive, which I would guess you also have a side to as well, this sort of sensitive side.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that. I'm not sure I kind of am quite at that threshold to kind of, I suppose, identify with it completely. But I think there's definitely a sensitive nature or sensitive side to me and something about picking that up from other people.
Yeah,
definitely.
So this is a huge thing to overcome, basically. And having these skills, having this experience of not wanting to speak up at school and seeing it in others in the workplace gives you a big advantage, really, as a leader to be able to identify these traits, because it's very easy to identify and promote the extroverts, isn't it?
Yeah.
We don't need to, they do it themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so easy to stay in that safe place that you are in school and that to carry through. And I certainly know for myself that there's been times where that's felt like the safest thing to do, and it's been a real push to do something more than that. But it's also really helpful knowing that as a leader, because you can notice where your team are fitting, what their strengths are, what their skills are. How can you tease out those strengths? How can you make it feel comfortable for themselves to put themselves forward? So I think that's the thing that the training did for me. I found that it was something I loved and something I flourished at. And so it was safe for me to kind of take up space in that way. And so as a leader, I think part of your role is to find your staff's strengths, find the things that they love. And, you know, I don't know if you've come across the idea of job crafting, but it's this amazing thing where you kind of fit a job to someone's strengths. And in an ideal world, all of our jobs would just be fitted to our strengths and we would all be happy, we'd all be flourishing at work. But that can be quite challenging in the charity sector and in pharma. And, you know, there's often too many cogs, aren't there, to be able to make things fit perfectly for us as individuals. But I think we can still do elements of that as leaders. I think we can find where our staff really excel and give them more space and opportunity to take a lead in those areas. And by doing that, they're going to find their voice more, and then they're going to be able to be present in other spaces too, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And there's something else you said connected with that, which gave me a bit of a light bulb moment, because talking about yourself as an introvert and this dislike of raising your hand or speaking up, I presume also in meetings, it seems almost as if as a leader, you were able to take on a different persona and speak up and be, which is interesting because introverts tend to shy away from applying for leadership positions. because I think, oh, I couldn't do that. I don't like speaking up in meetings. I don't like social events. And they seem to shy away from this. Whereas what you're saying from the other side is, I am an introvert. And from the other side, once you're in a position, you can then channel this different. It's different being the leader and speaking up than being another person speaking up in a meeting.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the thing that really enabled me to do that, particularly as a senior leader or kind of moving into senior leader positions, was, I think, a couple of things. First of all, I tended to move up within an organization and stay there for quite a while, then do a sideways step and then move up again. So by the time I was moving into senior leader positions, I was established in the organization. I already had a good reputation there. I knew all the players involved. I knew what their personalities were like. I knew how to work with them. So I already had an advantage in that I had these established relationships. But as I moved into those senior roles, they were more specialist. And within the organization, I had those expertise that facilitated that move. So I think having that expertise, having that knowledge and kind of owning that meant that I felt more confident and more able to have my own voice about those things. Sorry, excuse me. And kind of put those opinions forward because I knew my stuff. I knew what I was talking about. And that was my bit of the organization, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So I think there's something about knowing your knowledge, knowing your power, knowing your expertise and kind of trusting yourself in that. And I think that can take time as an introvert.
That's just what I was thinking. This seems like a typical, a very good route as an introvert. As you say, getting to really know introverts, we watch people, we're great observers. So really observing, watching, going sideways, waiting until you have that knowledge and then stepping into a role. And almost as if when you step into a role with all that preparation around you, it's not like the fast track extrovert. Yeah, sure, I can do it. And flying by the seat of your pants. But that moment you step into a role, it's almost as if the title gives you the right to speak up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's what being a facilitator or a trainer does. I think within those roles, I have the right to take up that space.
Yeah.
And that's the job I'm there to do. And so it feels comfortable.
And then when you then step down from that meeting, you then step back into the Alex, the introvert. Because you mentioned also something else interesting to me, but you said personally, your close friends are sometimes surprised that you describe yourself as
I remember I was out with, so there's a gang of four of us, and we kind of, well, we live all over the world now, in fact, actually, but we all met when we were working for the same charity, I don't know, 18 years ago, something like that. And we've been really good friends since. You know, the sort of gang of friends where you don't see each other every week, you're not necessarily messaging each other every week, but when you're back together, you're like this really tight knit little gang, you know. So those people who know you really, really well. And we were catching up, I don't know, this is a few years ago now, we were catching up after we hadn't seen each other for a while. And I don't know how we got onto the topic of being extroverted or introverted. And I said, oh, I'm such an introvert, blah, 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 blah. And my friend Sian said to me, she's like, what? You're not an introvert. And I was like, I am, Sian. I really don't like talking to people very much. She's like, but you never shut up. I'm like, that's fine because I'm with you guys. And you're like, you know, you're like my family. Like, there's so much energy from being with those individuals. But if I have to make small talk with people I don't know very well, it's the most draining thing. And I think that's the really interesting thing about why my friend didn't see me as an introvert, because with her, those interactions just fill me with energy and I don't need to go home and read a book and kind of hide away in a room to kind of re-energize, because there's such long-standing relationships. They're so joyous. It's not hard work. It's a bit like the training thing. It fills my cup. Whereas if I'm already tired and I'm having to make small talk with people in the queue for school pickup after a long day at work, I'm just, by the time I get home, I'm knackered by it. It's so interesting.
It is, isn't it? And it's fascinating because it's almost as if the introverts live on the edge of the two scales, because large events exhaust us. So the idea of putting your hand up and speaking in a large meeting generally is more intimidating than a small meeting. Yet, chatting at the school dates and doing small talk, which you would think logically with a maybe not an introvert brain, you would have thought that would be just one-on-one, not a problem. Yeah, that's just as exhausting, or a different type of exhausting, as large groups.
I think it can be, because I think that I can come across as quite standoffish when people who don't know me meet me. Sorry about that cat in the background. I think I can come across as quite standoffish. But actually, that is a combination of feeling a bit shy and the pressure of having to think about something to talk about other than the weather, or, you know, something with the school, for example. I'm not a quick thinker, I'm a slow thinker, I'm a reflector. And so having those conversations with people I don't really know, beyond the fact that our kids go to the same school or we get the same train every morning, you know, those people you know to smile and nod to, if I'm already feeling drained, it's hard work. And it's interesting because as those people become more familiar, it starts to feel more natural for me and it feels more comfortable, and there's less of that kind of emotional labor to it. And I just can't imagine how it feels for an extrovert where all of that just comes naturally.
Yeah.
And feels easy. And it's one thing that plays in my mind occasionally, how I could come across as quite standoffish or rude. And that's not my intention ever, because generally speaking, I'm quite a friendly person once you get to know me. But maybe standoffish is wrong. Maybe that's not the way it is. It's reserved, though. There's something quite reserved about me when you first meet me.
We sort of judge as negative for some reason. I mean, why?
Yeah.
It's interesting in society that reserve does tend to get translated as you said, standoffish. And I wonder if this anxiety it sort of invokes in us is the expectation of the other person. If I stand there, they're going to expect me to be able to talk, to have something interesting to say, and to know what they're talking about and be interested, and I'm just tired.
And I also wonder if there's something with introverts as well about us holding a sense of responsibility for other people, in the sense that I need to be polite, I need to be available, I need to be polite and make small talk, because otherwise I'm going to make someone feel uncomfortable, I'm going to have an impact on them, and we're kind of putting that responsibility for how other people are feeling onto us. And I don't think that's a conscious process. I think that's very unconscious. But I wonder if there's something about that within that too, if that makes sense.
Do you know, it's funny when you're saying that. Part of me, as you're saying that, is thinking, is that not normal for everyone? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I know what you mean, this responsibility for a conversation. But I realized I hadn't consciously had the thought that that's maybe not normal for all people. And maybe extroverts don't feel this responsibility for carrying the conversation, for the other person being, or people in a group being comfortable having a successful, nice conversation. So, yeah, we do.
I wonder if it's maybe even, and this would be really interesting to have this conversation with an extrovert, actually. I wonder if it's that they're not even thinking about that, that they're just there having a nice chat. And me and you as the introverts are overthinking it, going, oh God, this feels really uncomfortable because I've got to make small talk. Oh, they might feel uncomfortable about making small talk too, or they might be a chatter, so I really need to show up for this. And that's just not a thought process for an extrovert, maybe. I don't know, it'd be really interesting to ask.
I know a very good, I think we both know an extrovert extreme who would be.
Yeah, oh, you should get her on here. That would be a brilliant conversation for you to have.
It would, wouldn't it? It'd have to come with a warning. Sarah, we love you. One day we will have you on the podcast. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? How the extremes and the pressure can really cause us a lot of pain. I'm sure this is partly highly sensitive because we do sense other people's stuff.
Yeah.
And we tend, as maybe if you're a sensitive and introvert, we not only feel it, but we take responsibility for that.
Yeah. And I think probably the whole people pleasing thing fits into that as well, if you happen to be a people pleaser too. So they kind of gravitate towards each other, I think, a little, those traits. But it's interesting, I was just thinking about how that shows up in meetings as well. And how the sort of the thinking and the labour of kind of the quick response shows up in meetings, and how often, you know, everyone is so busy, particularly in the third sector, and again, I imagine pharma is the same, that you know, everyone is rushing around, everyone's trying to do everything, meetings are in the diary, the agenda gets cobbled together a couple of hours beforehand based on last month's meeting, if you're lucky, goes out to people. And again, that's great if you're a quick thinker, if you're kind of in the zone for the topics on the agenda, you can kind of throw your thoughts and your opinions out on that. But if you're more introverted, if you need to take time to think, if you know, you like to be able to consider things and reflect on them, it's even harder to put yourself out there and put your voice out there in those moments. And so you can lose really important opinions and perspectives that way within that kind of meeting and that thinking process, team thinking process.
Well, that leads me on to a question I was going to ask you is, so you've survived. What tips would you give to an introvert in business, in leadership, in meetings, at whatever stage of a career? What did you learn? What would you pass on?
I think making sure you have thinking time in your week and planning time. I think I so often got caught up in the whirlwind of busyness and doing and kind of the curveballs coming into you that I would lose that time for thinking sometimes. And then that would make those conversations more difficult. It would make planning more difficult and kind of doing the strategic work more difficult. And so I think making sure you have time to prepare. And even if things like agendas are coming out late, really thinking back to what happened in the last meeting, what were you responsible for? What are the likely topics going to be this week, this month? What do you think about that? So you're preparing yourself ahead of it, so you're not having to do the thinking in that moment. And I think as leadership teams, I think there's real power in remembering that people are bringing different skill sets. And so creating a culture of at work of, we're not going to get caught up in this busyness. We're not going to let ourselves just be in a whirlwind. We're going to create a culture where it is normal for us to prepare for meetings properly, to give people time and space. So there's great things you can do with agendas that are really simple, but will really help introverts mm-hmm. or thinkers. And so instead of just putting the headline topic, putting one or two questions that you want discussed in the meeting about this issue will really help those of us who are slower thinkers, reflectors, introverts, prepare. You know, if there's a policy that needs to be discussed, make sure it's sent beforehand so someone's got time to really read it, really consider it. So I think there's practical things like that in terms of planning and time. But I think also it, for me, what helped me in those roles was knowing what my strengths were, knowing what my skill set was, knowing what I brought to the organization and feeling confident in that. And that really gave me the sense that I could put my thoughts forward and that they were valid and they were important to the organization. So what are you bringing that helps the organization? What helps it achieve its goals, its mm-hmm. mission? And so if you can feel confident in that, then I don't know, for me, it felt easier putting it on the table. And I think working on your relationships, I think particularly if you've got people in your team who are opinionated or are the ones who always speak first, who take up the space in meetings,
mm-hmm.
really focusing on them as building relationships with them outside of the meeting okay. and not, because it's easy to see those people as individuals who take over or who might be people who kind of prevent you talking. But actually, if you see them as an ally and someone you can build a relationship with, who you can start to have a conversation with, if you can do that outside of a meeting, you mm-hmm. can start to bring that in.
Some really good points. So just, you know, recapping there. So it seems to me reminding yourself of your own skills, because it's very easy
yeah.
to forget in an extrovert world what our skills are. So preparing yourself physically, emotionally, whatever it is you need, whatever state you need, however you need to get into the best state you can be for that meeting, reflecting, I am yeah. this, I am this, I am not that person, and this is what I bring. Then
yeah.
preparing the materials. So
yeah.
even if there's no working agenda, having a rough idea, asking for an agenda, making it known
yeah.
I need, if you want to get the best out of me, this is what I need. So speaking up, not taking full responsibility, but being aware that the organization is also responsible for catering to you and not just the other way around. And then
yes,
this third
absolutely.
Point of, which is an interesting one, is making connections. So rather than resentment at people taking up space, maybe the meeting isn't the time to try and get in contact with them, but in between times when they know you and they know your experience, your qualities, your skills, maybe they will then call on you in the meeting and shut up long enough to let you speak.
Yeah, I think instead of trying to fit into this extroverted world, what are your strengths as an introvert? What skills does that bring? What qualities does that bring? And how can you use that to your advantage. And if actually you know you're great in one-to-one relationships, use that. Use that. And can I throw one more thing in, Louise?
Definitely.
I think there's something as well about how we talk to ourselves. It goes back to the idea of the stories we tell ourselves. And I think when you're an introvert, when you're an overthinker, if the story you're telling yourself is that you can't speak up, that it's impossible for you, that no one will listen to you, that people are going to talk over to you, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because you're not giving yourself the opportunity. And so if we can change that, some of that internal dialogue, if we can, I suppose, as you were saying before the meeting, reminding yourself of what your skills are, that will gradually shift if you challenge those negative perceptions of yourself, replace that with something more positive. It will shift how you're thinking and you're going to start to feel more confident speaking up.
Yeah. And as we said, slow burn. This doesn't have to happen overnight in the next meeting, but taking at least two or three of these tips and seeing, okay, what would that mean for me? What would, you know, who am I most intimidated by? How do I gradually work my way to having a conversation with them outside the meeting? Or who's my biggest ally in the meeting?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think there's nothing wrong with having a conversation with the chair of the meeting saying, actually, these are some things I've been reflecting on since we all met last. Is there any way we can check in around this in today's meeting? Or can I share with this with you before our next meeting? You know, find the other ways that feel comfortable to make sure your voice is heard.
That's a really good tip, actually, because from two ways. First of all, having that conversation, making it known that you have something to say before the meeting, gets it out there. And then if they call on you in a meeting, you can't go back. It's almost as if, but you've been given permission. You've already prepared the ground. You've said you have something to say. They haven't laughed at it. They've taken you seriously.
Exactly.
And then we're entering into that space where you then have the right. It's almost given you the confidence because that person says, yes, I would like to hear from you. Then maybe you can step into this other role where you feel the confidence because you have the right to speak. You're not just putting your hand up and worrying if people are going to laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you wouldn't be in the position that you're in if you weren't going to bring something to the organisation. You know, people don't keep staff around just for the sake of it, just to be nice. Yeah. You're there because you have skills, you have knowledge, you have expertise that they want. So don't hold it in. Put it out there where they can use it.
We do forget that, don't we? People forget that they were hired for a reason.
Yeah. It's like you didn't just get a job just because someone was nice to you.
Yeah.
Especially not in business.
No, it doesn't happen.
Get you out the door as soon as you're not performing. Yeah. So
you've got every right to
be doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your space.
Alex, it's been an absolute delight speaking to you.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for all your great advice and insights. And I look forward to speaking
to you.
You're
really welcome. Soon. I really hope your listeners find them helpful. See you soon.
Thank you. Bye. And that's all from English Talk for this episode. Thank you very much for listening in today. Please come and join me again on another episode. And if you have any comments, any thoughts, then don't hesitate to get in contact. See you again another week. Bye-bye.